Hello and welcome to Indie Author Answers, a podcast about self-publishing, writing, editing, marketing, social media, and all that sort of stuff for indie authors. I'm your host, Jim Heskett, and each week we'll explore the landscape of the publishing industry, and I can promise you I'll go off topic. On this podcast, I will, live on the air, edit my trunk novel, The Problematic Virtue, one chapter at a time. We're going to talk about what worked, what didn't work, what I could have done better, and what lessons I learned from writing it. You can follow along from the first chapter at jimheskett.com/beginning. Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is Jim Heskett from Indie Author Answers. That's me trying to be overly excited for no good reason. Anyway, what's up everybody out there? How we doing? How's your Tuesday? Or if it's not Tuesday when you're listening to this, how is your other day of the week? Anyway, like I said, I'm Jim Heskett and welcome to the show. Last week, we didn't do a tip of the week because I just totally spaced it, and so I'm sorry about that. So this week, we're going to get two tips of the week, also because the chapter we have to read in The Problematic Virtue is really short, so this is going to be a short and sweet podcast. But I'll talk about a couple things first. I'm working on a trilogy of novellas that's a thriller trilogy, and I could call it a trilogy, but I wouldn't do you like that. That'd be way too cheesy. So I'll just call it a thriller trilogy, tentatively titled right now The Texas Trilogy until I think of a better name. But one thing that's interesting, I listened to them Writing Excuses podcast, and Brandon Sanderson, the fantasy author, I've been reading his Mistborn series, his Mistborn trilogy, and I'm in the third book right now. And I think it's really fascinating that he says that he didn't really even conceive of books 2 and 3 in the series. He had no idea what they were going to be about until after he had already completed the first book in the Mistborn trilogy, which I think the first book was called Mistborn. This is just amazing to me because he does such a great job in books 2 and 3 of layering stuff back from the first book, of like going back to material from the first book and layering in new information and revealing new stuff. That my point is that like I'm writing this trilogy and my intent is I'm going to write all and finish all 3 books before I release them. You know, I've written a couple drafts of the first one. I'm in the second draft of the second one, and I don't know where the third one's going to go yet. But as I'm like writing things in the second book, I'm like, well, then I need to go back in the first book and change something. So the idea that he had finished and released the first book and then went back and started the other two is just amazing. My plan is I'm going to write them and then release them like 2 to 4 weeks apart. I haven't exactly figured that out yet, but close enough together that a reader won't go crazy, because each one is kind of very ends on a cliffhanger. I want to release them far enough apart that I have enough time to do individual book releases and marketing and all that crap for each one, but close enough together that a reader could... I want to put them all within the same pre-order span, you know, that you could pre-order all of them at once, and then there'd be just about enough time for someone to read one and then go start up the next one, or a couple weeks to build up a little bit of buzz. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So that was my trilogy speech. So my first tip of the week is a service called Ift. And if you haven't heard of Ift and you're not using Ift, it's the most amazing thing on the internet since porn, I guess. I don't know. So it's Ift. It's IFTTT. And it stands for If This, Then That. And basically all it is this is a totally free thing you can go sign up for. And what it does is it is a way to automate 2 services on the internet. And that may not sound all that helpful, but what you can do is so when you go sign up for an Ift account, they have all these channels, like WordPress is a channel, Facebook is a channel, Twitter is a channel. I don't think there's a Google Plus channel, but there's channels for like Google Calendar, there's channels for Foursquare and Swarm. There's basically dozens and dozens of internet services there's a channel for on Ift. And what you can do with Ift is you set up recipes that anytime something happens on one of your channels, you can tell it to do something else on a different channel. Now, hold on, let me explain. So you can set up recipes, like you, if you add a Facebook channel, so you give it your Facebook login info, and then you give it your Twitter info, so you have a Facebook and a Twitter channel, you can say, anytime I change my Facebook profile picture, also change that picture on Twitter. Or, to put this in writing terms, the way that I mostly use it for, is I use this to automate a lot of my social media communication. Like, I have a Tumblr account, and I don't really use it. For me, that's one of those 80-20 things. I don't write YA, at least. I have some plans to write YA in the future, but I don't write YA, so Tumblr's where all the YA fans go, from what I understand. So I don't have much of a presence on Tumblr. But I use Ift to post things on Tumblr. So what I do is I have my Instagram account that I don't pay a whole lot of attention to, but anytime that I post something on Instagram, it auto-posts it to Tumblr. Anytime I post a new blog on my WordPress account, it posts the link on Tumblr. So I have a Tumblr account, and I have a Tumblr presence, and I'm posting things to Tumblr a few times a week, but I don't ever actually log into Tumblr. Another thing that I do is anytime that I write a new blog post, it automatically goes out to Tumblr, Facebook, Twitter. Basically, it automates a lot of my social media communication and saves me a whole bunch of time. So I just set up this stuff on Ift, and then I let it go, and it's all automated. And it's even a specific, like, I have an Ift account for Indie Author Answers, and I have an Ift account for my JimHeskett.com blog. And their channel or their recipe is smart enough on Ift to know if I post in a certain category. Like, this podcast at IndieAuthorAnswers.com, it's actually just a category of blog on JimHeskett.com. But I've set it up so that anytime I post a new blog with the category or tag of podcast, Ift knows, it sees that category, and it pushes it out to my Indie Author Answers Facebook page and that Twitter account. Like, also, I use that category, so I have a Jim Heskett author page at facebook.com/author Jim Heskett, I think, or Jim Heskett author. I'm not sure which one. But so anytime I put a post on my blog that is about writing, it automatically gets posted on my author page. Anytime I post a blog post about something else, because sometimes I put up stuff like just random rants or stuff like I do movie reviews or book or music reviews sometimes, or just random thoughts. I don't tag that stuff, you know, with I use a writing tag for writing related posts, so I don't tag it with writing, and then it only goes to my personal Facebook. It doesn't automatically get posted to my author Facebook. So to sum up, Ift is the most amazing thing on the internet. If you spend a little bit of time adding channels and automating a few things, it will save you oodles and oodles of time in the future. And that is all. Again, Ift isn't paying me anything, but they totally should, because I'm a crazy Ift evangelist. I use it for all kinds of crap. If you want to, I'd be happy to talk more about the kind of stuff that I use it for. Maybe I'll write a blog post in the future and share a lot of my recipes. Or if you want to go to jimheskett.com/about and send me an email, I can give you some suggestions about the kind of stuff that I use it for. And now, here's your 2-for-1 special second tip of the week. I want to talk a little bit about reader magnets. This is a really slick, super short book by Nick Stevenson called Reader Magnets, and you can get it for free on Amazon. And his theory is, like, you know, we all know about, or maybe we don't if you're a new indie author, but everyone knows about permafree. The idea that the first book in a series, if you can make it free by kind of jiggling the Amazon system, publishing it free somewhere else. I'll talk more about permafree in a future episode. But everybody knows that if you make the first book in a series free, a lot of people are more likely to read additional books in your series. Well, for Nick Stevenson, what he was talking about is a lot, his big focus is getting people on your email list. And the self-publishing podcast guys talk about this, about owning your platform. You know, that if you throw all of your effort into promoting and building a social media channel on Twitter or Facebook, and then Facebook changes their rules, as we've seen them do recently, then all of a sudden you can't reach people anymore. Now Facebook is totally corporate and money-grubbing and only wants to promote get your stuff in front of people if you pay for it, those bastards. But if you have an email list and people are willing to give you their emails, then you can own the platform. You know, you get a huge, much higher engagement rates with email. And there's all kinds of stuff about this in his book, Reader Magnets. But the thing I want to talk about specifically is that he says to give people two things for free. To what you do is you have a perma-free book on Amazon, and then you have a link to your email list in the back of the book. And when people sign up for your email list, you give them something else for free. What he suggests is to give people the next book in the series. If you're writing a series, you know, with five books, you put the first one free on Amazon, and then you make the second one exclusive. This is one example. Make it exclusive for your email list. What I do, the first book in the Five Sons saga that I write, Five Sons of Treason, is free on Amazon. And I give away on my website, at least this is what I'm doing right now. It might change in the future, but I'm giving away a short story collection of three short stories. They're all kind of fun, satirical, just kind of dark comedy, fun short stories. Two that have been published in literary journals in the past, and one that I wrote exclusively for this short story collection. It's called Dogs, Cats, and Other Magical Creatures. And the only way that you can get this short story collection is by signing up to my email list. So using that as a reader magnet, someone gets my perma-free book on Amazon, they get to the end, they click through to my website, and they want to read a short story collection by me, the only way to get it is to sign up for my email list. All right, sweet! Now let's get on to our reading. This week we're going to do Chapter 7, Megan's POV. So let's just get into it. This is a short one. This will only take a few minutes. Chapter 7, Megan. Megan Lang navigated the throng of people in the kitchen to reach her backpack, which held her cache of wine coolers. Today she was wearing her new pink button-up top with her favorite jeans and the black belt that matched her black bracelet and earring. The shirt revealed a fair amount of her new tattoo, and she took some small thrill displaying it to everyone, or rather, displaying some of it. Maybe the new guy she was dating, Chris, would get to see it all tonight. Not a certainty, but she was leaning in that direction. Also at the party tonight was Chris's brother, Derek Wiles, who everyone just called Wiles for some reason. Chris Wiles was Chris, but Derek Wiles was Wiles. No one seemed to know why. Derek Wiles was in the living room, leaning against the wall with his hands in his pockets, one knee bent and his foot flat against the wall. He appeared shrouded in darkness with his tan skin and black jeans and hoodie, like a loiterer on a street corner, waiting for something to happen. She did not know him all that well, but after spending a brief amount of time with him and his brother, she suspected that underneath the gangster drug dealer exterior lived a scared animal. Or maybe he was just an asshole. Wiles waved her over. "Lang," he said. "Pretend that you didn't just see me. Chris is here and he wants to surprise you." "Gotcha," she said. "You're looking nice this evening," Wiles said, glancing up and down her body. He gave Megan a sleazy, one-sided grin with that look in his eye. And she smiled in return, but inwardly she cringed. She had grown accustomed to the boys who gave her those looks, with their contrived sincerity. Underneath that, they all thought the same thing. No matter what pleasantries came from their mouths, their eyes inventoried her different body parts as various cuts of meat. Everyone wanted something. "Thanks," she said, then pivoted on her heels and walked away from him. Even with his baggy jeans, dark hoodie, and sleazy grin, Derek Wiles was cute. Maybe his asshole-ish quality drew her in to some extent. Chris, however, had some of the same bad boy thing, but seemed somehow genuine and not so lewd and disgusting. Derek Wiles seemed more the type she used to go for, but she intended to change that. No longer a naive college freshman, this year she would break the cycle. After retrieving a fresh wine cooler, she pushed back through the crowd so she could get outside to where Whitney, Kelsey, and Becca waited for her. The house population swelled outside. She made her way through the cloud of cigarette smoke from the crowd gathered on the back porch to the three girls standing in their circle. Kelsey had on a similar pink top, which on some days might have irritated Megan, but not so much tonight. Kelsey sported that bolder thing of wearing a skirt over the top of jeans. It must be a bolder thing, because no one she knew in high school back in Oklahoma ever dressed like that. Not sold on Kelsey and Whitney, she for sure did not trust them. Kelsey and Whitney were the kind of bred-for-sorority girls that Megan detested. She'd only joined the circle because she'd been friends with Becca since they met in the dorms last year. Kelsey nodded toward the black snake of visible tattoo jutting from Megan's top. When did you get the ink? Oh, I got this done just a few days ago, Megan said. But it's been a long time coming. I've planned it and been drawing it for a while. I just had to work up the cash and the pain tolerance. Then Whitney lifted up the sleeve of her shirt, revealing the all-too-common tribal armband around her upper arm. I got this on spring break last year, Whitney said. It hurt like a bitch, but the guy who did it was, like, totally awesome. He gave me this huge discount. Megan smirked. Whitney did not impress her. Does anybody know whose house this is? Whitney said. I think the guy's name is Miguel, Becca said. Megan knows him, don't you? Megan shrugged. Not really. I met him. Big, thuggish Mexican. I know a friend of his, but I don't actually know him. Whitney and Kelsey studied Megan, probably not sure what to make of her. Megan assumed that associating with large, thuggish Mexicans was not an activity they might have listed under hobbies on their college applications. For a change of pace, Megan turned her head to scan the backyard for familiar faces. At first, it seemed just the usual array of keg party people, but then she saw a tall blonde boy, a shorter long-haired boy, and an attractive brunette girl close to the door. She had never seen any of them before, and long hairs were not her type, but something about the scruffy brunette grabbed her. He had not, so far, seen her. She turned her head back to her friends, while trying to steal glimpses out of the corner of her eye. The brunette girl blabbed noisily about somebody jumping off the roof. The brown-haired one triggered attraction in Megan, but not in the conventional ways, not anything like Chris, who is muscular, tan, and tall. The boy who caught her eye looked unsophisticated and not sharply dressed, but even at this different distance he had some kind of definite energy. She considered staring at him, thinking that she might eventually get his attention, but he appeared busy talking to the blonde kid and the brunette girl. I'll bet that's his girlfriend. In the middle of that thought, a pair of strong arms encircled her from behind. They belonged to Chris, or at least she hoped they did. Her companions all turned their attention to the well-built man standing behind Megan. Kelsey blushed, which thrilled Megan. Surprise, Chris whispered into her ear. His hands gently squeezed her hips, which excited her, but Megan kept her cool. His hands slid from her hips to her arms, then up to her shoulders, massaging them. Chris always cut little holes near the wrists of his long-sleeved shirts for thumb loops. So cute. Too late, she said. I saw your brother inside. I knew you were here. Who's this? Kelsey said. Hi, ladies. Chris Wiles, he said, extending a hand. Always such a gentleman. The girls all smiled at his biceps that seemed to want to pop out of his shirt. He was Army ROTC and in impeccable shape, and Megan had wondered for a couple weeks what all he might be able to do with those powerful arms. Tonight could be the night to find out. All right. That is the end of Chapter 7. Now let's go back and look through it. I have so many problems with this chapter, I almost don't even know where to start. Some overall thoughts. So Megan is a POV character throughout the novel. She has a small percentage of POV chapters, maybe 15%, if I remember correctly. Not a whole lot. And thank goodness, because she doesn't really provide anything useful. There's a couple of... Well, she's involved in a very critical scene from her POV near the end of the book. But a lot of this stuff early on doesn't really accomplish much of anything. And some other overall things that, you know, when I wrote this, part of the problem with writing a many POV book like this was that I wasn't very good at writing different people's POVs, to be honest, and writing women's POVs. I've gotten better at writing, you know, what they call the other. But here, really what I try to do is that the voice in Megan's POV chapters sounds like just like Brian's or Alex's POVs, except I describe people's clothes a little bit more. And that it's a little sexist now that I think about it. But at the time, it just seemed that, you know, she's a woman. She's probably going to notice people's clothing more. And that's something that, you know, you always want to keep your descriptions in the POV of your character, because if I was describing, if this chapter was from Brian's POV, I'm sure he wouldn't notice Kelsey's pink button-up top or whatever. You know, Alex might, because Alex is a little more of a snooty, clothes-horse kind of kid. So I think I do describe clothing a little bit in Alex's POVs, but not in Brian's. But anyway, so let's go back through and look at Megan's chapter a piece at a time. And the first thing you'll notice right away is that her POV is, again, distant. And I didn't get that at the time when I wrote it, but I totally get it now. Lines like, or rather, displaying some of it. Maybe the new guy she was dating, Chris, would get to see it all tonight. Not a certainty, but she was leaning in that direction. Lines like, not a certainty, but she was leaning in that direction. It doesn't feel like we're really in Megan's POV. It feels like we're reading a dry technical manual about what happened to her that night. So then we go on, and there's a little bit of exposition here that she's dating Chris, and that's Derek Wilde's brother. And if you read a lot of my fiction, you might notice that for some reason I give my antagonists names that start with the letter D. Maybe it's just a holdover from Darth Vader, because D is such a hard consonant that it just sounds gruff and rough, like Derek. But anyway, through the book, he's called Wiles. But so there's, I point out that there's that Chris's brother, there's Chris Wiles and there's Derek Wiles, and Chris is Chris, Derek is Wiles. This is just a little bit of reinforcement for that previous point. Then we describe Derek's in the living room. She goes up to say hi to him, and we notice that he calls her by her last name. Wiles waved her over. Lang, he said. Oh, but let me skip back just a little bit. In the previous sentence, she didn't know him all that well, but after spending a brief amount of time with both him and his brother, she suspected that underneath a gangster drug dealer exterior lived a scared animal. So what I'm trying to do here is that Megan is a psych major, and so I tried to include more of her opinions about people's behavior, and it works a little bit, but I definitely could have done that a lot better, because here it's kind of just telling, you know, that he's that got that gangster drug dealer exterior. That's just Megan is telling the audience all about Wiles, and she thinks there's a scared animal in there. And I don't really know if I would characterize Wiles as inwardly a scared animal, but then, or maybe he was just an asshole. The next sentence, which is sort of my attempt to make Megan feel a little more amusing and snarky and funny. I don't really think it works, though, because we don't know her yet. We don't know her to be snarky. We just kind of know her to be, all we know is that she doesn't like Derek. Really, that's the only thing we know about her. So Wiles waves her over, and he calls her by her last name. He calls her Lang. And at the time when I wrote this, I had intended to write this whole series of books that were featured similar characters. Like, I did write a book after this one that featured Megan's little sister. So the name was important. But the fact that Wiles calls people by their last names is important, and that's going to come up, not important to the story, but important to critiquing the story, and I'll bring that up in Wiles' POV chapters later. So that'll give you an excuse to stick around. Stay tuned for future episodes of Indie Author Answers. Blah, blah, blah. So then Wiles hits on her, and so we pretty much have Megan admitting that she knows that she's super hot, which won't really, you know, she's used to boys who give her those looks with their contrived sincerity. Their contrived sincerity is not a very endearing phrase, but it's also not really endearing that she's so used to boys giving her those looks, because, you know, a reader's like, oh, Megan's hot and she knows it. You know, that's not a very sympathetic character. Anyway, so they look at her body parts like they're different cuts of meat. And then we see that she walks away from Derek and she thinks that he's cute. And I think that's an attempt to set up a little bit of romantic tension between Derek and Megan, because later on, later in the book, they're going to be roommates. It doesn't really work. But also, what I'm trying to do here is at some point during one of the multiple drafts I wrote of this book, I realized that characters need to have arcs and characters need to have desires. And so in a belated attempt to give Megan something that looked like an arc, I tried to make her seem, or I tried to give her an arc that she was trying to not date jerks anymore, and she wanted, because she's now a sophomore, you know, she's much more mature than the naive college freshman. She's going to break the cycle. But the thing is, I think throughout the course of the book, I just kind of dropped this because she doesn't ever really grow and change as a result of that. So it's kind of my half-hearted attempt to give her a character arc that didn't really work. So then Megan goes outside to Whitney, Kelsey, and Becca. And like I mentioned last week, you know, Whitney, Kelsey, and Becca having names doesn't really accomplish anything. And really, this whole conversation with them doesn't accomplish a whole lot either. I think at least one of those characters does appear later in the book, if I remember right. But there's just so many names for readers to remember now. So then she's talking with them, and Kelsey has on the similar same top, which some days might have irritated Megan, but not so much tonight. And as I'm reading this, I'm like, Megan is just not likable. You know, she knows that she's hot. She doesn't like boys looking at her. She's catty with these girls. I really haven't found a single, you know, reading this objectively as a reader, I haven't found a single likable thing about Megan. And if you're going to give characters their own POVs, there needs to be something likable, or if not likable, compelling. You know, like Walt from Breaking Bad isn't very likable, but he sure as shit is compelling. You know what I mean? And somebody who's really good at this is George R.R. Martin, because, you know, he does a million POVs in his Song of Ice and Fire books. And one of the things that he does really well is he takes a character who is an antagonist and then gives you some of his POV chapters and gets you on his side, which is really a monumental feat when you think about it. Like Jaime Lannister. In the first, I think it's in the first two books, he doesn't have any POV chapters, but we see him, we know he's a jerk. I'm not going to spoil anything if you haven't read the books, but Jaime Lannister is a real jerk. But then in the, I think it's the third book, we get some chapters from his POV, and by the end of the book, you know, when I first started reading it, I was like, I don't want to read Jaime's POV, he's a dickhead, I don't want to read his stuff. But then throughout the course of the book, he won me over, because I learned things about Jaime and the way he saw the world that made me like him. That's a pretty amazing feat to win over a reader like that. Anyway, so Megan doesn't trust Kelsey and Whitney, and there's no good reason why. They're bred for sorority that Megan detested. Here's more reasons not to like Megan, because he doesn't like these girls on principle without even knowing them. It's a contempt prior to investigation thing. She's friends with Becca, and that's the only reason she's talking to them. And here's another kind of sexist thing that I've done that, I don't know, I guess that I thought that women were all catty, and so I made Megan really catty. I probably could have done a little more research and, like, read a lot more books about women by women, but I wasn't really into doing, you know, quote, research and that kind of junk. Anyway, so then they're chatting about Megan's tattoo, because we want to remind everyone that she has a tattoo, and this is good because the tattoo is going to come into play later. Whitney has a very cliched tattoo, and Megan is judgmental about that. Whitney doesn't impress her, which that line just makes Megan smirked, Whitney did not impress her. That just makes Megan sound outright unlikable. And which would be fine if I was trying to make Megan out to be the antagonist in this book, but she's not. She's supposed to be a sympathetic character because bad stuff happens to her throughout the course of the book. And she's the cause of a lot of grief. She's, you know, she's sort of, Megan is supposed to be sort of, I guess, like a tragic hero, kind of. So then they're talking about Miguel. He's a big thuggish Mexican, and the girls are like, eh, Mexican. And then, of course, like the reader probably could have predicted, Megan sees Alex, Brian, and Heather across the yard. So this POV chapter is happening at the same time as the previous POV. Now, I talked before about how I don't like to describe characters' looks unless they're minor characters. I think I mentioned that before. But in this case, the fact that we already knew that Alex was blonde and Brian had long hair, it actually comes in useful, because when she's standing across the yard, she doesn't know Alex, Brian, and Heather's names. She's only going to know what they look like. And probably the reader, will remember the blonde Alex, long-haired Brian. So that does give the reader a visual cue to know who Megan is talking about. And then just to be sure, we talked about Heather's blabbing about somebody jumping off the roof. If you remember from the last chapter, Megan had or Heather had this soliloquy about drunk Laura jumping off the roof and having to be taken home. So then, of course, Megan is attracted to Brian, the long hair, and she feels conflicted about it because she's supposed to be dating Chris. This is going to become a very important plot point later. Not important in that it actually advances the story much, but important in that it takes up a lot of word count. So whether or not that it's important, you can decide for yourself. Then Chris shows up, and all the catty girls are like, this guy's so hot. And then the chapter kind of ends with Megan deciding that super hot Army ROTC Chris with his cliched giant biceps, that she might sleep with him tonight. And then the chapter just kind of ends. So it doesn't really... I'm not of the school that you always want to end your chapters with cliffhangers. You know, I've read plenty of books where every time there was a cliffhanger, the chapter ended. And I find that to be really annoying. But you want to have... you want to have your chapters end on something that spurs the reader to keep moving. You know, you don't want really want to give readers a reason to put the book down at the end of a chapter and say, I could stop here. And I think what I tried to make the ending of the chapter a little intriguing by doing this, like, will she or won't she sleep with Chris tonight? But the thing is, Megan is so unlikable, I don't think a reader would care whether or not she sleeps with Chris. Like, she's kind of catty and she thinks she's stuck up and she knows she's hot. Who cares if she's going to sleep with this dude or not? Well, that's all I have to say about this. Thanks for listening again. Tune in next week for more hijinks and shenanigans and rambling monologues by Jim Heskett. Appreciate it, everybody. Now stay tuned for the song. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you found us. Check out the show at indieauthoranswers.com. Also, check out jimheskett.com and sign up for the email list to get notified of new episodes and freebie goodies. Like the Indie Author Answers Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Indie Answers. I appreciate you spending your time with me. Now go out there and write. Do it. Jim says so.